Om sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavitvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om. Welcome to our webcast of our ongoing Saturday morning class on Shankaracharya's Atmabodha. In our last class, we finished verse 29, so we're going to complete now this topic, self-revealing Atma. And let me just speak about this briefly to introduce verse 30. We'll start with verse 30 today. So here we have the irony. How do you discover that which is already present in your experience? Remember, consciousness, Atma is the consciousness present in your experience right now, the consciousness by which you know what's going on around you in the room, the consciousness by which you know what I'm saying and doing right now. That consciousness is Atma. That consciousness certainly doesn't need to be revealed. It's already present in your experience. Then what is the point of Atma Bodha, knowledge of that already revealed Atma? Well, as we discussed at some length in our prior class, the problem is not that Atma is absent from your experience. The problem is there's so many wrong conclusions about that Atma, superimpositions on that Atma, which lead to suffering. When you conclude that your consciousness is affected when your body is ill or when your mind is agitated, if you wrongly conclude that your consciousness is actually affected, you suffer. The purpose of Atma Bodha, self-knowledge, then, is to remove those wrong conclusions that are the source of suffering. Like our famous rope snake in a dark alley. The rope is already present in your experience, but you superimpose a snake on a rope, and that superimposition causes fear and suffering. The solution then is to remove the snake. How? By negating the reality of the snake and discovering the reality of the rope. So notice there's negation involved. You have to negate the snake. If we're in a dark alley and I'm standing next to you and you say, "Oh, snake, snake," you're really worried and frightened. And I say, "It's not a snake, it's a rope." You say, "No, no, I can see a snake, it's right there." Notice, just merely telling you it's a rope doesn't work. We have to negate the snake in order for you to discover the rope. In the same way, merely to say your true nature is Satchitananda, it doesn't work unless it is preceded by negation. So this is our topic, to gain knowledge of that self-revealed Atma consciousness. What's required is negation. And with verse 30, we conclude that process of negation. We'll pick up the thread there. Repeat after me. Avidyakam sharirādi, avidyakam sharirādi, drishyam buddhavatksharam, drishyam buddhavatksharam, etadvilakshanam vidyad, etadvilakshanam vidyat, aham brahmeti nirmalam, aham brahmeti nirmalam. Start in the second line. Drishyam. Drishyam is that which is seen. And here we're employing one of the most fundamental methodologies employed by Advaita Vedanta. Methodology, we used the word before, prakriya. Prakriya, methodology. So here the prakriya is to distinguish between the knower and known, the seer and seen. Anything known to you is not you. Anything seen by you is not you. Excuse me. So here we start with drishyam. That which is seen by you is not you, obviously. So what is seen by you in the first line? Shariradi. Sharira, your body. Your body is seen by you, therefore you're not a body. You can say you have a body, in a manner of speaking, but you cannot say, I am a lump of flesh and bone, because that's not an accurate statement at all. So that lump of flesh and bone is seen by you. It's known by you. It is drishyam. And not only is your body seen by you, adi, etc., your body is seen by you, experienced by you. Your senses, whatever your senses pick up, is experienced by you. Your thoughts, your emotions, all that is experienced by you. It is all drishyam. Drishyam, literally seen, but in a broader sense, experienced. Anything experienced by you is not you. You are the seer, you are the knower, you are the experiencer, you, that consciousness. So your body, mind, senses, all seen by you, known by you, experienced by you, and obviously the world outside also seen by you, known by you, experienced by you. All this, Shankara uses this very sophisticated word, all of this is avidyakam. You might get that the word is derived from avidya. That which is born of avidya. Avidya, of course, means ignorance. That which is born of avidya, that which is born of ignorance, is avidyakam. So he says, your body is avidyakam. It's born of ignorance. In what sense? Well, if you didn't have ignorance, if you were enlightened, in your prior life, if you didn't have ignorance and you were enlightened in your prior life, you wouldn't have been born into this life. This is the reference Shankara is making here to the doctrine of karma. Because of ignorance in your prior life, you were subject to transmigration, reincarnation at the time of your death. Therefore, you got born with this lump of flesh and bone. So this sharira, this physical body, is avidyakam, born of ignorance. Not only this body, but adi, etc., including the world around us, a little more sophisticated. Look at this. Just as your body exists due to ignorance, so too the world exists due to ignorance. We can take this in two levels. One is very, very subtle and sophisticated. Let me avoid that for now. That's not our main topic. But how about this? This world goes through cycles of creation and dissolution. So previously, this universe was in a state of dissolution. Then it became manifest. What caused it to be manifest? Well, if you understand the doctrine of karma properly, the world becomes manifest for the sake of the fructification of all the karmas committed in the prior cycle of the universe, karmas which have not yet been fructified. So unfructified karmas from the prior cycle of creation cause the universe to become manifest again in the succeeding cycle of creation. Where does ignorance come in? Well, all of those karmas from the prior cycle of creation were committed because of ignorance. If everyone were enlightened, there would be no one to commit any karmas whatsoever, but because everyone is in a state of ignorance, all those people in the prior cycle of creation, they all committed karmas, and those accumulated karmas eventually led to the generation of this next cycle of creation. I know, a little complex, but that's the doctrine of karma. So here, avidyakam shariradi, your body, mind, senses, and the world around us, all of it is avidyakam. It is all the product of ignorance. It is all drishyam, seen by you, experienced by you. Therefore, it's not you. And Shankara concludes with one more adjective, two more adjectives. He says, budbuddhavat ksharam. All of that is kshara. It's constantly decaying and subject to destruction. And he gives a nice metaphor, budbuddhavat. What a nice Sanskrit word, budbud, is for bubble. It sounds like a bubble, 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 bubble. You get the idea, budbuddha. Budbuddhavat, like a bubble, is born and then subject to destruction at any time. In the same way, your body, mind, senses, and the universe is created and therefore subject to destruction. And here's a very simple philosophical principle. Anything created is subject to destruction. The very basic principle. Your body was created. It was born of ignorance. Therefore, your body is subject to destruction, along with your body, mind, and senses. Born of ignorance, subject to destruction. So too the world around us. Born, created. It had a beginning. Even modern science will say 13.7 billion years ago, the universe began with the Big Bang. That which begins is subject to ending, destruction. So everything that is drishyam, seen by you, experienced by you, budbuddhavat ksharam, is subject to destruction, just like bubbles, and most importantly, because it is drishyam, seen by you, experienced by you, it's not you. You are the seer, not the seen. You are the knower, not the known. You are the experiencer, not the experienced. So Shankara continues, etat vilakshanam vidyat. Vidyat, you should understand. Understand what? Etat vilakshanam. That which is vilakshana, different from etat, all of that which is seen by you. So that which is vilakshanam, different from all that is seen, what is different from the seen is the seer. What is different from the known is the knower. What is different from the experience, from experience, is the experiencer. All of these are words for consciousness. What does it mean to be a seer? It means to be a conscious being who can see. To be a knower, you have to be a conscious being who can know. To be an experiencer, you have to be conscious. So all of that refers to consciousness. And now Shankara drops the... There's an English expression where you say, you drop the bomb. To drop the bomb means to give a very big and bold statement. And his bold statement is, etad vilakshana vidyad, you should understand that you are different from all of that. Then what are you? Aham brahma iti nirmalam vidyat. What you should understand is what is different from the seen, and what is different from the seen is seen, known, experienced. What is different is what? Brahma. Brahman, the reality because of which everything exists. And aham, the Sanskrit pronoun I, aham brahma, I am that Brahman, which is nirmalam, literally not tainted, but it means absolutely transcendent, utterly beyond any aspect of worldly existence. Aham Brahma iti vidyat. You should understand that I am that. You've heard that before. I am that. In fact, there's a mantra, soham, saha aham, I am that. So with this, Shankara is concluding this section on the self-revealing Atma. And notice in this verse, the first half is negation. The second half is arriving at the already existent truth. Already existent. Remember, in that dark alley, the rope is already there. All you need to do is get rid of the snake. In the same way, your divine nature, Satchidananda Atma, is already here now. All that's required is to negate all the wrong superimpositions on that Atma, consciousness, to remove all the wrong conclusions about that consciousness. Okay. So, with that verse, Shankara concludes this subject matter, verses 27 to 30, the self-revealing Atma. And now we move on into a new topic, Vedantic contemplation. Quite a series of 8-9 verses on contemplation. The Sanskrit word we use for contemplation is nididhyasana. And this topic is coming for the first time. So let's understand what is Vedanta contemplation, nididhyasana, and why it's so important to perform nididhyasana. So before we see the verse, let's introduce it properly. The reason for nididhyasana has to do with this problem. The problem is, even though you know the crystal is clear, it still looks orange. So in order to appreciate the clearness of the crystal, you can't wait for the orangeness to go away. The orangeness may not go away. It's a matter of deeply assimilated knowledge. You have to know without any doubt, without any any lack of certainty, that this crystal is clear in spite of the appearance of orangeness. Now let's go to what this represents. The example I've given so many times, orangeness of the cloth represents sadness of your mind. Just as the orangeness of the orangeness you see in the crystal is not necessarily going away. In the same way, the sadness in your mind is not necessarily going away. But just as the orangeness of the cloth gets superimposed on the crystal and that causes a confusion, here the sadness in your mind gets superimposed on consciousness, on you, your true nature, and that causes suffering. So what will it take to not remove the suffering? We've discussed in several classes, suffering is normal, natural, sadness. What will it take to remove the sadness? Sadness is normal. It's a normal human emotion. And we've established in at least two other classes that your mind is not your enemy. Sadness is not your enemy. Sadness is normal. The problem is not sadness. The problem is when you take sadness very seriously, when you think sadness truly affects you. Just as the orangeness doesn't truly affect the crystal, sadness doesn't truly affect your consciousness. But your experience doesn't support that. your experience is of an orange crystal in the same way your experience is that consciousness seems to be affected by sadness. To get rid of that, that is such a deeply ingrained conclusion that sadness affects you. How will we ever remove that deeply embedded conclusion, ingrained conclusion, that sadness affects you? Well, first of all, these teachings have already made it clear at a conceptual level. How can, if you are the knower and sadness is known, there's a vast gulf between knower and known. There's no connection. They're separate. They're different. Knower and known are different and separate. Therefore, sadness belongs to the mind, as the orangeness belongs to the crystal. Sadness belongs to the mind. Sadness does not belong to you, the conscious being, the awareful observer, the knower of sadness. Conceptually, you get it. Problem is, this deeply ingrained conclusion has to be removed. It is the technical term, for those of you who like Sanskrit, the technical term is viparita bhavana. Bhavana means a feeling which is viparita, opposed. A feeling which is opposed to what you know to be true. What you know to be true, conceptually, is that your consciousness is utterly unaffected by sadness, but you have this viparita bhavana, this deeply ingrained, conditioned thinking. What to do to remove that conditioned thinking? That's the purpose of nididhyasana. So in spite of your cognitive clarity, that consciousness remains utterly unaffected by sadness, there is this deeply ingrained conditioning, viparita bhavana. And the conditioning is that you feel like you're affected by sadness. To remove this conditioning, mental conditioning, we need deconditioning. And that which provides the deconditioning is Vedantic contemplation, nididhyasana, the Sanskrit word. Needs a little more introduction. What will it take to know that the crystal is unaffected by the orangeness? Well, you've seen this crystal in front of my cloth so many times, you have no doubt. It's absolutely clear to you. Clear to you, pardon the pun. Anyway. But the very first time I brought the crystal out, it wasn't so clear, so to speak. And here's a definition of contemplation. To see the truth of what you already know, to see that truth again and again for the sake of clarity, for the sake of assimilation, and for the sake of removing any lingering conditioning, viparita bhavana, that is the purpose of nididhyasana. The best way to explain it is with a favorite story, the lion story. For those of you who have heard me tell the lion story, I apologize, but it is just such a wonderful story. I have to tell it in this context. It's my favorite story for showing the relationship of Shravana and Nididhyasana. Most of you know that Vedanta is threefold. The sadhana, the spiritual practice of Vedanta, is threefold: Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. Shravana is mostly what we've been doing. Shravana literally means listening, but in this context it means undergoing a process of self-inquiry guided by the teachings that you hear from a teacher. So Shravana is what we've been doing. It is this inquiry into the nature of Atma using the teachings of Vedanta, and you happen to hear the teachings of Vedanta, which is why it's called Shravana. Shravana literally means hearing. Then the other thing we've been doing, whether you know it or not, is manana. Manana is a process of removing doubts, using reasoning to remove doubts. We use a lot of reasoning in this class. And the whole idea is this. Doubts are born of improper reasoning. So for the doubts that are born of improper reasoning, we remove those doubts with proper reasoning. That's manana. That's not our topic now, so I'm not going to go further. But the three practices in Vedanta, Shravana, self-inquiry guided by the teachings, manana, removing doubts by the use of reasoning, that's what we've been doing so far. Now we come to the third Nididhyasana contemplation. To see the relationship, there is no better story than this lion story. The famous Swami Vivekananda was very fond of this particular story. He also told it frequently. So here's the story. There was a lion cub with its mother wandering through the jungle, and the lion cub got separated from its mother. Mother wasn't able to find a lion cub. The lion cub was abandoned in the middle of this forest, and the lion cub felt very alone, very frightened. Anyway, the lion cub, being alone and frightened, this lion cub saw in the clearing nearby, saw a flock of sheep. All the sheep were there. And this lion cub, being lonely and frightened, went towards the flock of sheep for company. And these sheep, remember, lion cub was small, and these sheep are big. So that normally sheep are afraid of lions, but this cub was very small and cute, I suppose. So as the lion cub approached the sheep didn't run. In fact, as the story goes, the sheep accepted the lion cub into the flock, and his little lion cub grew up in this flock of sheep, leading to a very strange situation 10 years in the future. Now there's a full-grown lion in a flock of sheep. The sheep aren't afraid of this particular lion because it grew up with them, but what an odd scene. A flock of sheep with a full-grown lion among them. All the sheep are grazing in the grass. The lion, too, is grazing in the grass because the lion only knows grazing in the grass, having grown up with the sheep. The lion doesn't know it's a lion. The lion thinks it's a sheep. Just like you don't know, perhaps, that you are Satchidananda Atma, you think that you are this body, mind, and senses. This is the idea of the metaphor. Anyway, the story ends, actually doesn't end, it goes on a little bit further. Another lion was passing by and saw this very strange scene, a flock of sheep with a full-grown lion standing amongst them. And the lion was confused and wondering what's going on, curious. So the passerby lion starts approaching the flock of sheep. The sheep see the lion approaching, and they get scared. They run away because they're afraid of lions. What does the confused lion do? The confused lion sees the approaching lion and also gets afraid, thinking it's a sheep, and the confused lion runs away. They're all running away, and the passerby lion is now just amazed. What's going on? He doesn't understand. The passerby lion chases after the confused lion. We'll separate them like that. The lion that thinks it's a sheep is the confused lion. So the passerby lion chases after the confused lion to find out what's going on, and corners the confused lion at the edge of a pond. Apparently, the lion doesn't want to jump into the water, so the confused lion is very much afraid, trapped at the edge of a pond, and the confused lion says, "Please don't eat me." Passerby lion, I was just said, "Why would I eat you?" And the confused lion says, "Because I'm a sheep, and lions eat sheep." The passerby lion says, "You're not a sheep. You're a lion like me." Now that's interesting. You're not a sheep. You're a lion like me. What does a confused lion say? The confused lion says, "No, I'm not like you. I'm a sheep." Notice I said before, merely telling you the truth doesn't work. Just saying you are Satchitananda Atma doesn't work. You have to negate all the wrong conclusions, negate all the superimposition before the statement you are Satchitananda Atma can work. In the same way, for the passerby lion to say, "You are a lion like me," he's telling the truth. But merely telling the truth doesn't work unless it's preceded by negating the wrong conclusion, which means the confused lion has this wrong conclusion that I am a sheep, and until and unless that wrong conclusion is addressed, the confused lion will never know itself to be a lion. So the passerby lion has a methodology, like our Vedantic methodology. The passerby lion tells the confused lion to look at its reflection in the pond. The confused lion looks at its reflection in the pond. The passerby lion says, "Look at your reflection. Does the reflection look like a sheep, or does the reflection look like me?" That's it. With that methodology, the sheep conclusion was destroyed because the confused lion didn't see a sheep reflected in the pond. The confused lion saw a lion image reflected in the pond. And the confused lion was no longer confused. The confused lion knew it was a lion. Notice the sheep confusion, the sheep conclusion, had to be removed by looking in the pond. In the same way, the conclusion that you are your body, mind, and senses, that wrong conclusion has to be removed. Puja Swami Dayananda, my guru, gave this beautiful metaphor. He says, "You like looking in at the reflection in the pond," he used this expression, "you have to look into the mirror of words." That is Vedanta. By seeing yourself in the mirror of words, that is Vedanta, your wrong conclusion that you are your body and mind is removed. Because when you see yourself through the words of Vedanta, you don't see a body and mind. You see Satchitananda Atma. You see unborn, unchanging, limitless consciousness. So this is Shravana. Shravana is the process of inquiry guided by the teachings of Vedanta that leads to the removal of the wrong conclusion and the discovery of your wrong and the discovery of your true nature. Now, all of that is set up so we can finally identify what is contemplation, what is the role of nididhyasana. The last part of the story illustrates that. So our confused lion is no longer confused. He's no longer feels itself to be a timid sheep, now knows itself to be the king of the jungle, and he thanks the other lion, goes off boldly into the jungle, and instead of joining the group, the flock of sheep, doesn't need the sheep anymore. So the lion, when night comes, the lion just stretches out in the middle of the jungle and sleeps deeply, being afraid of nothing. Next morning, that lion wakes up, and pardon my metaphor here, the just as you and I, actually I won't speak for you, I'll speak for myself. When I wake up in the morning, I'm groggy, dull. I need a cup of coffee, etc. So this lion wakes up also groggy. And no coffee for the lion. Sorry for being silly. So the lion wakes up with a dull mind and sees the flock of sheep over in the clearing, and without thinking about anything in particular, the lion goes and rejoins the flock of sheep and continues to graze on the grass. Why would he do that? That deeply ingrained wrong conclusion that it's actually a sheep. It's so deeply ingrained that even though the lion discovered its true nature the prior day, the lion for 10 years has been thinking it's a sheep. And only yesterday did it discover it's a lion, so that 10 years of conditioning is present for the lion. How many years of conditioning are present for you? For how many years have you concluded that you are merely body, mind, and senses? That conditioning has been there for decades and is very deeply ingrained. So, what should the lion do to remove this deeply ingrained conditioning? Here's a methodology. If that lion goes back to the pond and looks at its reflection, he'll see the lion. Notice that the lion won't see anything new. The lion already knew it's a lion. But suppose the lion returned to that pond first thing in the morning every day. After waking up, the first thing that lion did was to go back to the pond, look at its reflection. Yep, I'm a lion, all right. And he does that every single morning, not to gain knowledge of being a lion, already knows it's a lion. This seeing what the lion already knows again and again is necessary for deconditioning. It's necessary for removing the lion's vipadita bhavana. Remember, viparita bhavana, a feeling or conclusion which is viparita, opposed to what you already know to be true. So the lion looks at its reflection first thing in the morning, every day for several months, and eventually it becomes unnecessary. Eventually, all that conditioning eventually is fully removed. In the same way, through the practice of nididhyasana, that conditioning, for decades of conditioning, that I am the body, I am the mind, I'm a limited individual, I'm affected by the illness of my body, I'm affected by the sadness of my mind, all of that conditioning is gradually removed through the practice of nididhyasana. And just as for the lion, it was to see again and again what it already knew. So niridhyasana is to see the truth of yourself again and again. Even though you've already discovered that truth, certainly by this point in our text, you've discovered, you've got it. You know that you are that consciousness independent of the body, mind, and senses and everything else. You get it. But that conditioning may still be present. The conditioning that leads you to feel like you're affected by the illness in your body. The conditioning that leads you to feel that you're affected by the sadness in your mind. Decades of conditioning are there. Those decades of conditioning need to be removed through Vedantic contemplation, Nididhyasana. And that introduces the first of a series of verses on Nididhyasana. Shankara begins, Dehanyatvanamejanma, jarakarshyalayadayah, shabdadivishayai sango, nirindriyatayanacha. All right. So each of these verses are restating what you already know, but restating it to give you an opportunity to remove all that conditioned thought, the viparita bhavana. So here, in the first line, and significantly, verses meant for contemplation are frequently written in the first person. Notice this verse and the following verses are all in the following verses that talk about contemplation are written in the first person. First person means I, me. And here in the first line, the pronoun is may, for me. May, for me. Deha anyatvat, because I am anya, because I am different from the deha, body, deha anyatvat, because of my nature being separate from the body. And body would represent mind and senses, but mind and senses are going to be taken separately as we continue. So just stay with body for now. So dehanyatvat, because I am different from my body, I am separate from my body. As we saw in a prior verse, body is drishya. It's an object seen by me. I am the seer. As a seer, I am different from the seen. Body is seen. I am the seer. I am anya, different from deha, the body. Deha anyatvat, because I am different from the body. Na me janma, me, for me. There is na janma, there is no birth. Birth belongs to the body, not to consciousness. We've discussed this before. Consciousness didn't get born at your birth or at the moment of your conception. That consciousness pre-existed the birth of this body and the conception of this body. Therefore, because birth belongs to the body, and because I am other than the body, therefore, na me janma, there is no birth for me, for consciousness. Na jara, in the second line, there's no old age for me. Old age, jara, belongs to the body, not to me. Na karsha. Karsha means getting weak, getting emaciated, decay, the decline of old age. So there's no karsha, no decay for me. Jara, old age belongs to the body, not to me. Karshya, decay belongs to the body, not to me. And laya, laya here means death. The body dies. That which is born dies. Consciousness isn't born. Consciousness isn't death. So laya dayaha, here again, adayaha, etc. All that belongs to the body belongs to the body, not to you. The body is drishya, seen. Therefore, all the problems that belong to the body don't belong to you, the seer of the body, the knower of the body, the experiencer of the body. You already know this. Why is Shankara saying it? For contemplation. This is meant to be contemplated upon, and contemplation means to, I guess it requires more explanation. Let's hold off on it. I want to explain the process of contemplation, but let's finish this verse, maybe sit a little bit further. I'll come back and talk about the process of contemplation. So, dehanyatvat, because I am separate from the body, therefore, name, for me there is no janma, birth, jara, old age, karsha, decline, or laya, or death. All of that belongs to the body, doesn't belong to me. Now, that's with regard to the body. What about senses? So he's a little bit methodical here. First, we have a contemplation with regard to the body. Then we have a contemplation with regard to the senses. In the next verse, there'll be a contemplation with regard to the mind and prana. All of that coming in the next verse. But here, now in the second, first half is body, second half is senses. In the final line, nirindriyataya. Because I am nirindriya, without senses, sense organs, separate from my senses. Your sense organs belong to the body-mind complex. Senses don't belong to consciousness. Remember, the way senses work is your sense organs pick up information from the world around you and convey that information to your mind. All that sense information arises in your mind as vrittis, as mental events, and therefore it is then revealed or illumined by consciousness. The vrittis in your mind, born of your sense organs, are illumined by consciousness. Certainly, consciousness is separate from those senses. Nirindriyataya. Because the consciousness which I am is independent of the senses, therefore, na sangaha, going up to the third line, na sangaha, there is no connection to what? No connection with shabda adi vishayaihi. There is no connection to vishaya, literally object, but in this context, experience. There's no connection with experiences of shabda. Here shabda means sound, adi, etc. So your five senses pick up five different kinds of information from the world. And it says that it is your senses, I'll paraphrase now, your senses pick up information from the world. Your senses may be affected by whatever they pick up. If you hear something really loud or dissonant or like, what is it, some scratching sound that on a chalkboard, different sounds can irritate people. If you hear an irritating sound, that irritating sound can certainly affect your power of hearing. How does that sound affect consciousness? consciousness is asanga. Here are the words na, sanga, asanga. Consciousness is asanga, detached, unconnected, unaffected. And that's a key word here, unaffected. Consciousness is unaffected by the problems of your body because the problems of your body belong to your body. Consciousness is unaffected by the problems of your senses because the problems of your senses belong to your senses. Consciousness is unaffected. The Sanskrit word here is asanga. Asanga literally means not connected, but in this context, unaffected. Consciousness is unaffected. Now, what is the process of contemplation? This is often not taught, so let me make a point of teaching it briefly here. This is not a class on contemplation. Sometimes in our meditation classes, I teach this thoroughly, but this is not the time for a meditation class. The point here, though, is that contemplation, formal contemplation, is preceded by meditation. Meditation prepares your mind for contemplation. Meditation, dhyana. Dhyana prepares your mind for nididhyasana, contemplation. Meditation is to make your mind quiet. Why is that important? Suppose our lion, remember our lion looking at the pond, suppose the lion at the beginning of the story where the lion is cornered by the passerby lion, suppose that lion is so afraid and just shaking wildly, and that lion shaking wildly is unable to look at the pond and see its reflection. It is so afraid, it shakes violently and can't look at the pond. Before the lion can see its image in the pond, the lion has to calm down, stop shaking. So, before you can practice nididhyasana, you need to meditate. Calm down. Quiet your mind. And the reason is, in that quiet mind, you have an opportunity to confirm these teachings, an opportunity to experientially confirm the teachings of Vedanta. So let's do it now. We're not going to do a contemplation, but I want to describe to you that process of contemplation. First half of this verse says that my consciousness is unaffected by the problems of my body. Suppose you sit and meditate and ask yourself, this is nididhyasana. I'm going to model for you the process of nididhyasana. Step one, meditate. Meditate until your mind can become perfectly quiet, just for a few moments. You don't have to be quiet. Your mind doesn't have to be thought-free for minutes and hours. Just a few moments of silence are all that's required. Meditation can help you gain a few moments of total mental silence. And that total mental silence is crucial. Just a few moments, but it is crucial. And here's how nididhyasana works. Your body has many problems. At least my body has many problems. I know that very well. The question is, do the problems of my body truly affect me? Well, now that I'm performing contemplation, first I meditate, I make my mind silent, and then in those few moments of silence, I have a chance to find out if there are any problems caused by my body. Notice, in that silent mind, consciousness is present and nothing else. Consciousness and consciousness alone remains present in your mind when it's perfectly silent. Again, just a moment, few moments of silence. So in those few moments of silence, you have a chance to find out, do the problems of your body truly affect consciousness? If they did, if the problems of your body truly affected consciousness, then in those few moments of silence, those problems would still be present. But what you find is in those few moments of silence, the problems of your body are absent from your experience. In this way, you experientially confirm that the problems of your body belong to your body and not to consciousness. This experiential confirmation is nididhyasana. Then, with regard to your senses, so if various things are irritating your senses, the question is, do the sounds and things that affect your senses, do they affect consciousness? Again, you meditate, you create a few moments of perfect silence, and in those moments of perfect silence, you have an opportunity to find out if the problems of the senses affect consciousness. And in those moments of silence, you discover consciousness is utterly unaffected by whatever happens to the senses. This is nididhyasana. I think, actually, I want to see at least the first half of the next verse, just to finish this, because this verse deals with first half body, second half senses, and let's just see the first half of the next verse, just to finish this introduction to nididhyasana, and because it deals with mind. So, amanas tva na me dukkha, amanas tva na me dukkha, raga dvesha bhayadayah, raga dvesha bhayadayah, aprano hyamana shubhra, aprano hyamana shubhra, ityadi shruti shasanata, ityadi shruti shasanata. We'll just see the first half of this verse briefly. So it says, Amanastvat, because I, literally, because I have no mind, I am mindless. Consciousness doesn't have thoughts. Consciousness reveals thoughts. Consciousness doesn't have emotions. Consciousness reveals emotions. Consciousness doesn't have sensations. Consciousness reveals sensations. Thoughts, emotions, sensations belong to the mind, but amanastvat, because I am independent of the mind, therefore, na me dukkha. Therefore, for me there is no dukkha, sadness. Dukkha, sadness belongs to the mind, not the consciousness. Not only dukkha, but raga. Desire, passion, belongs to the mind, not to consciousness. Dvesha, aversion, hate, belongs to the mind, not to consciousness. Bhaya, fear. Fear belongs to the mind, not to consciousness. Adayaha, and all other mental events, all of that belongs to the mind and not to consciousness. I wanted to include this just to give the example of nididhyasana. So how does it work? The problem to be addressed is this conditioned thinking that sadness in your mind truly affects you. Well, if sadness in your mind truly affects consciousness, it should be present even in that moment of silence. So, you perform nididhyasana. First, you meditate to make your mind silent just for a few moments. And then in those few moments of silence, you have an opportunity to find out whether or not the sadness in your mind truly affects consciousness. And in those moments of silence, you discover that the consciousness, which is your essential nature, is utterly unaffected by the sadness of your mind. All the problems of your mind belong to your mind, not to consciousness. Those few moments of silence are an opportunity to experientially confirm what you already know. Cognitively, you get it, but that conditioning is present, that conditioned feeling that I feel like I'm affected by the sadness of my mind. Those decades of conditioning are addressed through this nididhyasana, through this seeing again and again. In those moments of silence, you see again and again that your consciousness is utterly unaffected by the problems of your mind, by the problems of your senses, by the problems of your body. This is nididhyasana. We'll continue this topic in our next class. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramayaha. Sarve bhadrani pashyantu. Ma kashchid dukha bhag bhaveta. Hasato ma sadgamaya. Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya. Mrityor ma hamritangamaya. Om shanti, shanti, shanti. Om Tat Sat.